Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. No one's live.
The horror show at Extreme Rules was certainly a noteworthy show, certainly a newsworthy show at the very least, because there were a lot of reported last-minute changes made to this show. So we've got like a whole bunch of these. Sorry, I am Luke Owen. This is El Fakador Laurie Blake. Welcome to the post-Extreme Rules, sorry, the horror show at Extreme Rules 2020 review, WrestleTalk podcast review show. I was up late, mate. Even though it's only a two hour 40-minute show. So actually, off the bat, I want to say I'm loving these 2 hour 40-minute pay-per-views. Yeah.
Oh, they clip along at a lovely pace.
Oh, breath of fresh air, mate. Like, yeah. I said to my wife last night, like, well, this morning, rather, I was like, it was only 2 hours, 40 minutes. Obviously, you know, that's 3 hours, 40 minutes with the pre-show. But even so, like, it used to be, do you remember the time when it was, like, 4 hours was the minimum pay-per-view time with a one-hour pre-show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no time. There's like, I think the benefit of these is there's no time for fatigue to set in. I don't just get to the point where I'm just like, well, I have now seen enough wrestling. Like, and unfortunately, there is just an unseen tank of how much wrestling I can possibly manage. And WWE used to fill it up, and now they don't. And they just get to that point where it's like they end at the point that I was like, cool, I'm happy with the amount of, I'm satisfied with the amount of wrestling I've seen.
So satisfied with all the wrestling. But yeah, there was quite a lot of last minute changes. This comes from various different sources, one of which is Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio, and the other is our boy Louis Dangor, who was texting us and messaging us throughout the show with his various reports, the feedback that he'd been getting backstage from his sources. So here are some of the very last minute things that were changed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we knew Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy, the bar fight, was originally going to be on Extreme Rules. That was moved. Reasons for that are quite unsure at the moment. There were a lot of people, like, we had messages afterwards being like, why didn't that match happen? But I think they announced on SmackDown that it was going to feature on TV as opposed to feature on the pay-per-view. Yeah. Similarly, Orton versus Big Show was going to be on Extreme Rules. They've been building to this for, you know, for the last month or so on Raw. The plan was always for it to be on Extreme Rules, hence why it's an unsanctioned match. But with ratings falling, and, you know, last week's Raw doing its record low number, the week before that doing nearly its record low number, they decided to put it on Raw tomorrow to get a ratings bump. So they took that off the pay-per-view, put it onto Raw to get a ratings bump. I'll be honest with you, that's the story of this show, mm-hmm. is you've watched the pay-per-view, now you've got to watch Raw to find out the answers. Yeah. And I don't think that's the worst. We'll get into it a little bit more in a bit. And I don't think that's the worst tactic, but it's when you do it across the whole show, that's when it becomes a frustrating
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
So, yeah, so Orton versus Big Show was meant to be on Extreme Rules. Owens versus Buddy Murphy, or rather Kevin Owens versus Murphy, was was booked and added to the show 3 hours before they went live. Basically, yeah. they had no kickoff show match, and then they were like, "Oh, I suppose we better Kevin Owens and Murphy, you go out there and you just do 8 minutes."
I'm happy. You know what, actually, that.
Yeah, do you know what? It was one of the better matches of the night. Loved it, mate. Yeah.
Do you know why? Really, because it was good. Untethered from nonsense.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. The stipulation for the Dolph versus Drew match, there was a graphic that got released earlier in the week that was like, I think it was a Facebook thing that said that it was going to be a TLC match. Mm-hmm. Now, there had been some speculation that that wasn't a legit thing, like it was a fan-created thing that just sort of got spread around as misinformation. Now, it appeared to be the case because it wasn't a TLC match. It said it was way, way better than that. I thought actually the stipulation they had was really, really
so
good.
So clever. Really smart.
So good. But according to our boy Louis, the stipulation for the match was not decided until very late in the day, either late the day before, so late Saturday the decision was made, or early Sunday morning the decision was actually made. Drew and Dolph were not told until they got to the building what the stipulation of the match was.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I think they were probably like pitching more ludicrous ideas the whole time. That's what I feel like when you, on a show where you've also got a swamp fight and eye for an eye match, they were like, what could we do that's also like horror show styly? And then they were just like, do you know what, actually this like new form of handicap match is a much more interesting proposition. And it was great.
Yeah, really, really like that. That for me actually was probably my favorite match of the whole night.
It's the most cohesive really match of the night. Really, like start to finish, yeah, just made sense, and everything that happened in it like served both guys really, really well. I think, you know, there are plenty of the other matches had very good wrestling in there and probably a higher quality of wrestling, but the finishes just made them suck.
Well, on that note, that, I mean, nothing like that's never been more prevalent than the Sasha Banks Asuka match, which should have been match of the night because they were having a killer match. It was so, so great. But the finish was really, really pants. And apparently, this is from Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio. The finish of that match was changed on the day by Vince McMahon. It wasn't originally going to be that Asuka lost. Originally, Asuka was scheduled to just win. Mm-hmm. But they decided late in the day that they were going to change it and that Banks was going to get the win. And that's the finish that they decided to go with in the end. And it, which like the biggest feedback I saw to that match, it was actually put very well by Adam Blompier, which was just, it was an NXT match with a WWE finish. Mm-hmm. And really that's how it felt. And yeah. I think that kind of then shows in the report that, yeah, Vince changed the finish to it late in the day.
And you know what? Like, I don't actually hate the premise of the finish. I think there's a lot of mileage that you can get out of the finish. It's sad that you're watching a pay-per-view and that feels like it should be sort of the nice conclusion of the feud, and there should be, you know, someone gets a moment out of it. And instead, they've sort of done this is actually just the prologue to a longer story that we're going to tell on Raw. Watch Raw. Do you remember to watch Raw? Are you going to watch Raw this week? Watch Raw. But I think you can get so much story out of holding the Royal Women's Championship hostage, and it can feed the Bayley and Sasha Banks feud quite nicely. It can give Asuka something to sort of fight against. Like, it means we're probably going to get a rematch, which, yes, please. So there are really positive things to come out of it. It just happened to make zero sense in the moment when it happened. Like, you know.
Yeah, and I think...
Less sense than when Nikki Cross thought she won the belt off Asuka.
Yeah.
Like, less sense than that. Yeah, that made no sense. Oh, sorry, Baszler. Sorry, and yeah, she stole the belt. But like, yeah, less sense than even that.
My problem with it comes with, because I think you're right, like the actual finish itself in terms of this is the first part of a longer story is absolutely fine. And I think it works really well for Banks and Bayley to be, you know, holding the belt hostage and taking everything. The problem with it comes is you're also doing that with the US title. Mm-hmm. Like, you're doing the exact same storyline across two different belts. On this show, Apollo Crews was not there. And the reports are that he was among those that were tested positive for COVID-19, and that's why he wasn't on the show. I guess they thought that he might be able to make it in time, and the decision was hence why they were promoting it up until the day of the event. Even, you know, on the show, basically, they were promoting it was going to happen. But yeah, Apollo Crews was taken off the show, and in the end, MVP just came out and announced himself as the new United States champion, which is weird because that's what they did on Raw 2 weeks ago. Like, they did that same segment where they unveiled the new belt, and MVP came out and said, I pinned the champ, so I'm now the champ. So they just essentially replayed it again on Extreme Rules. And that's why the finish to the Banks Asuka match was so frustrating, because we're now in a situation where it's like, well, okay, we've got two title, quote unquote, title changes, but neither of them were actually title changes. Mm-hmm. And you've got to tune into Raw to find out what's next about these so-called title changes, because according to WWE.com, Asuka is still the Raw Women's Champion. Apollo Crews is still the United States Champion. So though that's two more segments on this show that means it didn't actually matter.
Yeah. And I think what wrestling doesn't need is confusion. it's complex enough as it is to kind of keep track of. And I don't think it just needs these elements of, like, because the Apollo ones, it feels very much like they might just go, okay, well, MVP is actually the champion. That's fine. That can stand, because if Apollo can't compete, you can just do the same as you've done sort of with the Cruiserweight Championships, and just gone like, well, we're just going to crown an interim Cruiserweight Champion, and then we'll resolve that when, you know, we can open up again and people can come and compete. But, like, obviously they might not do that now, but who knows? Like, I just think it's like in the Banks and Asuka case, it's at least a storyline moment, but you're still sort of sitting there going, what now? Like, why, when it feels so obvious that things are just going to return back to the status quo, what even is the point in this storyline? You know, same with the MVP thing. Like, if you 2 weeks ago, you do a section where you have him crown himself the United States champion. That seems like it's going to build into a story. But if there was even the inkling that Apollo might not be able to compete, stop promoting it. Just do something else. Like, think of another thing to do. Like, Give him a coronation. Like, you need a pop for Raw, give him a coronation on Raw and just be like, look, Apollo can't compete, we're going to crown MVP the champion. Do that and make that a really big segment. But, like, to do that segment on Extreme Rules but have nothing happen, like, it wasn't even like a celebration. It was just he comes out and announces it and then does a pose and walks back to the backstage. Like, even just tease some tension between him and Lashley might have done something to make it feel like, it felt like a very dead end of TV. Like, there was nothing to grasp from that. Like, I was sitting there just being like, and Apollo's music is going to hit, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, if he's not cleared, then he's not cleared. But it felt like that was the thread that they were dangling, that something might happen. Yeah, like anything. And instead, it just was like, and now we're just confirming that what we said a couple of weeks ago, that yes, MVP is the United States champion. So there we have it.
I totally agree with you. If there was a doubt that Apollo Crews wasn't going to be there, if the report is true and he has been tested positive for COVID, which, you know, if it is true, all the best to him. I hope he has a speedy recovery from that, 100%. But if it was a case that you knew that he might not be there for the show, then you've been doing a storyline with Ricochet and Cedric Alexander with MVP and Bobby Lashley. So just change the match to MVP defending his title against Cedric or Ricochet. Like, yeah. Ricochet and Cedric want to stand up for Apollo Crews, and just like, you're not a real champion, so I'm going to take this belt off of you to give it to Apollo Crews when he gets back from his injury.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Something around that.
Yeah, or have Apollo choose a proxy to fight on his behalf because he's not cleared. Like, there's so many other things you could have done that aren't just, genuinely felt like a waste of time watching that. It's like, yeah, I knew that. Thank you.
So that basically means that, like, you know, half the matches, possibly even more than half of the matches on this show were late last minute decisions. Mm-hmm. And it was very funny, really, because we had our morning meeting today that we've been doing every single day since the start of this lockdown period of WrestleTalk, where we kind of go through, you know, what we're going to do through the day, sort of, you know, just and have a bit of a chat and catch up. And Ollie was actually very positive about this show. And if you've seen his 10-minute review, he really, really enjoyed this show. And one of the reasons for that is because he went in with exceptionally low expectations and ended up very much enjoying the show, I certainly don't disagree with. I think if you enjoyed this show, you're well within your rights to do the same. If you didn't enjoy the show, within your rights to. What we found watching the show live, because you and I did the live reactions last night with Denise Salcedo, is that people were very down on the show. And I felt like I was a bit down on the show as well. And the reason why I felt like I was down on the show is that effectively, what it essentially said was this pay-per-view doesn't matter. This is a proper B-level show that does not matter because you've got to watch Raw and SmackDown next week to really find out what's going on.
What we had on the show, fast lane, right? Like it's that feeling of like, well, something more important is happening next month. So this is placeholder WWE at its finest. But it's even worse when there's no resolute. There's not even just a clean finish to be like, okay, well, this furthers the feud going into SummerSlam. It just confuses things.
Like what we had on the show, we had three non-finishes, basically. We had, you know, the swap match didn't really have a finish. Mm. The Banks Asuka match had a non-finish. And the Apollo Crews match didn't have there was no match.
No match.
Exactly. And then within that as well, you then had two confusing title changes, which are doing the same story, but across two different belts. Both of which you definitely could have done other things without. There felt like there was no clear rule around the swamp match. I do feel like it was the weakest of the cinematic matches, even though actually I did enjoy quite a lot of it. I particularly enjoyed all the character work from Bray. And to cap it off, I mean, we'll talk about the Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio, eye for an eye match when we get into the full review. But that finish was pants.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that, like, you know, we've obviously leaned on the negatives here for the beginning of this podcast. But my overall view of Extreme Rules isn't negative at all, really. I think I actually really enjoyed watching the show. I love the wrestling matches removed from the context in which they ended. And I think that's probably one of the reasons people are having difficulty liking this show, is because it feels like, you know, watching a wrestling match is an investment of your time and your interest and your hype for something. And you're like, you know, I was very invested in the Asuka Sasha Banks match. I knew that the finish was going to be probably not what I wanted, which was Sasha winning the title clean. But like, I was prepared for a situation in which it was very close fought and both women looked great. And I was assuming there would be some sort of Bayley shenanigans to finish it. I wasn't expecting the ones that happened, though. And the kind of just dumb WWE, like you know, it's the if that is it to become an official and to stop a match, just to put on the vest and then just do stuff, like, why wasn't Asuka more pissed off at the end and like running out of the ring? Like, you know, there was just a bunch of it that just didn't, you know, did she not know that Bayley had pinned her? Like, that there's kind of things like that. Sorry, that Bayley had hit her with the thing, and then Bayley was the one who counted the three counts. So she, you know, there's that moment where she could have been like, well, the match isn't finished yet. So you just end up with more questions. And it feels like all that hard work and all that investment is undone because the finish is just imperfect. So it just feels a little bit like wasted energy putting it into being like, oh, I really cared about this. And now I've had to be like, oh, well, I've just been disappointed yet again. Sad times.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Do you like wrestling? Do you like improv? Do you like role-playing games? And you'll love No Roles Barred, presented by the WrestleTalk Podcast Network. Six players come together to create a fictional wrestling promotion, roll dice, and create the kind of insanity that real companies can only dream of creating. Can Tony the Milkman survive the twilight of his career and still find time to care for his wrestling son? Can the Denimatrix overcome the vicious Apex and achieve total denimation? Can brothers Golden Joe and Silver Bro coexist as a tag team before they combust? Find out now with the wrestling show that everyone's talking about. No Roles Barred is available wherever you get your podcasts and only presented on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network.
Well, let's see what you thought up in the super chats. Please do get your super chats in. We'll be responding to each and every one of them throughout this show. Kicking things off, Azo Smith said Sasha vs. Asuka was an NXT match with a WWE finish. Bailey should get the Bestie of the Year award for fixing Sasha's wig after the match. Also, did you notice they took the screams out of Nikki Cross's theme? I don't think I did notice that, to be honest. But, I mean, she is a babyface now, so I guess, yeah, take those out. Very much so, NXT match, WWE finish. And you know what? In a way, I'm just glad they're not doing the Bayley Bank split yet, because I love that team so much.
Yeah, they are money. They're brilliant.
Here we go.
You could run that to WrestleMania, actually, to be fair, couldn't you?
Mm. Yeah. Quidotin, what happens to the Raw women's division now? Good question. You've got to tune into Raw to find out, mate, because ratings are bad and we need people to watch the show.
Well, this is more indicative of their overall problems with their women's division, is that they only ever pick two people to be important at one time. So we have Asuka, who's important. And now that they've realized that Sasha Banks and Bayley are a great double act, they're now also high levels of importance. So putting the Raw title on them means they can be on Raw to at least sort that out. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's great, but it does mean that when, say, Sasha gets pregnant or something, you know, or Sasha gets injured, or Asuka gets injured, or Bayley needs to go somewhere, like, they're just stuck being like, okay, well, Eliminek, who's the next one? And, you know, that's the exact same problem they got in when Becky had to go out.
I like this from Ben Isaacs. He said, it's 2020, and I preferred an Impact pay-per-view to WWE. Yeah, do you know, I mean, one of the really lovely things from this weekend was seeing people be so excited about an Impact Wrestling show. I thought that was quite lovely, really. Mm. It was really good to see. It took me back to sort of simpler times. I thought Impact put on a great match. We talked about this on the live stream yesterday. I thought the Deonna Purrazzo Jordan Grace match was so great. Absolutely loved it.
I think they did very clever marketing for Slammiversary, and they got a lot of eyes on it that they wouldn't normally have got. And I think the, you know, the Good Brothers being announced on Friday was genius. Like, and I think just that hanging in the air notion that they've done some shopping and there are going to be some WWE people turning up. That's just that wrinkle of, like, Impact's always got very good wrestling in it. And so they just needed that platform to showcase it. And I think Slammiversary provided them that, thanks to, you know, WWE clearing house a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and their pay-per-view falling just like, you know, the day after, you know, all the contracts, the 90-day non-competes were very, you know, it's very, very good. I thought they marketed it absolutely brilliantly. But back onto the horror show at Extreme Rules. Let's go through the whole show itself. The pre-show match, as we said, was decided, you know, 3 hours before the show. Kevin Owens versus Murphy. Really hard action to start with. That was great throughout, with a stunner by Owens for the win. Had his great little twisting moonsault that he does. I really, really enjoyed this kickoff show match.
Yeah, I think it's what, like we were saying on the live stream, it's really interesting that you get that what I think, what I would consider as kind of a dream match. Like, that's kind of a dream. I'd love to see that do 20 minutes at a pay-per-view for a title. But because Murphy's just been positioned as Seth's lackey, you can just chuck them together and go, okay, that's a match that's just happening now, apropos of nothing. So, yeah, amazing stuff. Like that. But I do really feel like the pre-show matches need to be that level of attraction. Like, it should be someone like a Kevin Owens doing something pretty cool. Like, I know it feels like a bit of a step down for the wrestler themselves, probably, to be like, you're on the pre-show. But look how good and exciting the pre-show matches were when it was New Day and Usos, and how much those guys rose to the occasion. And I think same thing with Murphy and Kevin. There's like that level of, well, you're going to put me on the pre-show, F you. I'm going to go out there and do something incredible then. But that's brilliant for WWE, because then you get that, you get the kind of in people's heads that this is going to be really high quality wrestling. And they probably should, if they haven't already signed up for the pay-per-view, sign up for the damn pay-per-view.
Yeah. Ollie made the point in his review that it's kind of a good continuation of this Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens storyline. But I kind of hope it's not a continuation of that, because that will have mean that Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens have been feuding since bloody November. Like, you know, and we had the blow off to that at WrestleMania. Kevin Owens beat him twice. Like, we don't need to be continuing this feud on into the summer. Like, it doesn't feel like it needs that. Like, Kevin Owens needs to be moving on to other things. Seth has moved on to other things, but if like beating Ray is just going to set him up for another Kevin Owens feud, I that to me feels like you have hit a roadblock, end of the line.
Yeah, you are just circling the drain at that point, aren't you? Like, oh, look, the idea again has come back round, but we're slightly lower down looking up.
But I'll tell you what I really, really enjoyed on the main show. New Day versus Cesaro and Nakamura, the Artist Collective, in a tables match. This was awesome. Really, really fun tables match. Really, really great. Particularly enjoyed, I've made a noun out of it, but Kofi getting Wile E. Coyote'd into a table. The sort of springboard thing. And Nakamura and Cesaro just put the table up. So he just cracked into the table. It was really, really funny.
There were so many good bits in this where there was like they just set up so many tables throughout the course of this match. I feel like most tables matches revolve around one table in play at any one time, and this had the double stack that obviously played into the finish, which we'll talk about in a second, but it was amazing. And then they had set up tables everywhere, so it just felt like the threat level was so high. Like, it really did feel like you weren't like laboring towards a finish at all points, and like it was a real slog to get there. It just felt like this match could end at any point. And I think that really hyped the drama for it all the way through.
Yeah, no, totally. I really liked the drama that they had of this, about like, you know, there were points where, you know, you and Denise were like freaking out because they would do like a spot to the outside, you know, Big E's doing his spear. And his spear through the ropes is, I mean, it's quite a spectacular thing anyway, because I hate it when he does it, because it looks like he's always going to pop his shoulder out, his big, massive shoulder. Mm-hmm. But there was also a table on the outside, but the table was slightly to the left. They were never going to go through it. Yeah. But because that table had been set up on the outside, we were like, oh my God, he nearly went through the table. It was really, really well, smartly paced throughout. And the finish saw them create a double stack table. And Kofi was going to, I assume, Hurricane Rana Cesaro off of it, but Cesaro instead caught him and powerbombed him through both tables. Cesaro and Nakamura are your new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. We did go through this yesterday, but Cesaro has got quite the litany of tag team title wins with various different people. Let's just go through them again. He is a five-time Raw Tag Team Champion. Four times with Shaman, once with Tyson Kidd. Yeah. And he is now a two-time SmackDown Tag Team Champion, once with Sheamus, and now with Shinsuke Nakamura. So, good litany of tag title runs there for Cesaro, but that also does mean he's never being put into proper singles feuds, and that really does suck.
Yeah, you don't like to end, I guess, like his WWE career is going to like finish up and he's going to have been a 12-time tag team champion. But you're never going to get the accolades that someone like the New Day are going to get for having that same level of reigns, because the New Day have been that one cohesive unit the whole time. And Cesaro has just been your sort of phone a friend tag team partner. And he's obviously amazing. And that's the problem. He's obviously brilliant. They really like him doing matches on shows, but they just don't want to push him in the right way, do they? Like, But yeah, I think him and Nakamura are a great team. And I do think this is the right choice for SmackDown, actually. I quickly made my prediction just before the show started because I didn't realize this match had been made. And I was just like, yeah, this is it's the right choice to put it on them. It just feels like the right time. It's really something for them to do, especially if, you know, Sammy's going to return at some point. It gives, if that faction comes back together, it's going to give them something to do.
Absolutely. For the SmackDown Women's Championship, Nikki Cross took on Bayley, the champion. Very, very good match this as well. Bayley picking up the win off Sasha Banks' interference. There was some referee confusion and Banks slipped Bayley her like boss rings, like the big sort of boss knuckle duster. And she used that to punch, Nikki Cross in the gut and hit sort of like her falling forward DDT thing for the win. Decent stuff this, and I thought the Bayley Banks interference was smart because it was then there to play off into the next match, well, you know, to a match later on where they were both going to be at ringside again.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about the interference is the sort of the video gaminess of every time they're doing these referee spots with the belts, because they've got so many belts, they're just like chucking belts in the ring. So the referee is like, oh no, a belt, I must get the belt out of the ring while also not using any of my peripheral vision. And then they go and chuck the belt out. And then that's when all these shenanigans happen. And that has been the blueprint for their matches for the last few months, and is getting a little bit stale. It's that kind of, it was like Adam Cole's run in NXT, like late last year, where it was just everything was an Undisputed Era interference. It's like, I don't mind interference. I think interference makes sense for those groups, but varying up the ways in which it happens makes sense. And like the new sort of, I'm just going to chuck a belt in the ring and see if the referee falls for it. It's time to start flipping that expectation on its head and not have the referee fall for it. But the match itself was bloody brilliant. Like there was some really good, like fiery stuff with Nikki Cross as well, where she hit the purge super early in the match and everyone was like freaking out. She hit it off the apron as well to the outside, which looked brutal. She kicks out of a Bayley to belly as well. It was really, really cool and clever what happened in this match. I think Nikki Cross, despite the fact I think most people were just like, yeah, she's going to be the SmackDown Women's Champion, but in a showing that was worthy of, like, it felt like they had to stoop to that level of cheating to win, because she really did feel like she was on the cusp. That's really good.
We then got the MVP Apollo Crews non-match, where MVP just came out and announced himself as the champion again. And then we got Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio, eye for an eye. Okay, so the common sort of defense I've seen of this match, you know, and Ollie made this defense as well, which is 4 weeks they have told us you're going to see an eye come out of a man's head, right? You know, they pretty much said that out on the table, and everyone said, I then went into this match with very low expectations. That's all fine and gravy. In another lifetime, I was a film critic. I was a freelance film critic, which means I got sent a lot of DVDs to review. Lots of low-budget horror movies in particular is what I got sent to review. It's basically what I bet my bread and butter was reviewing. Straight to DVD, horror movies made with 10 quid and a packet of M&Ms that has somehow found a distribution deal, and I'm now reviewing it. And a lot of them had some very, very creative ways around the issues, because when you're working with a low budget, you have to, you know, do things now. You have to sort of sacrifice the quality in order to get somewhere else. But I always had the same criticism of a lot of these places. So like one of them that I got, I remember quite clearly, was a found footage movie that's basically set on the Lost World, Jurassic Park. So they sort of find themselves on this dinosaur island. There's dinosaurs everywhere, right? So it's a low budget found footage movie, which means they were using lots of CGI dinosaurs. But because it was a low budget movie, the CGI was appalling. So, so bad. And it was, when I was watching, I was like, why did you bother? Like, if you can't do it, then don't do it. Yeah. Like if you can't actualize the vision that you have in your head, then don't do it. Think of something else to do and wait until you have got the resources to be able to put that vision out there. And this is true of a lot of like low budget horror movies. They have these big grand ideas. They can't do it. So then what they make is a bit rubbish and it just looks a bit crap. And that's what happened here. WWE promised that they were going to have an eye fall out of a man's head. Mm-hmm. And what they and they couldn't do it good. So what they did was they just did it rubbish. And it just looked, you know, we've got it here to have a look at. There it is. That's the eye that came out of Rey Mysterio's head. It just looks rubbish. It looks fake. It just looks rubbish.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? Because it's like you're doing it live on a night. And so you've decided to do it as an in-ring match. And I actually think the gimmick for the match added to what I was watching. Like, you know, I really liked the way they worked together and they worked around this idea of the eye being the really important thing. I think a lot of people have a lot of problems with like being grossed out by anything to do with their eye. Like I particularly am like, that's why I can't wear contact lenses, but like, so I think it really did make sense here. It really did up the drama. And I was watching this genuinely thinking like, I don't know how they're going to do this finish, but I really like how they're getting there. And I think the story that was told through the match about the sort of the back and forth around how we have to end this match made a load of sense. They didn't do like a load of silly spots where everything that happened really felt like it was feeding into that narrative. And then, yeah, like you said, if you don't have the props ability to do this bit nicely, why didn't Ray and Seth just brawl to the back? Like, if you just brawled to the back of, like, so you brawled out of the ring and you brawled to the back of the performance center, right? You could cut there to a pre-recorded video package that, like, has already been shot and already been filmed that sets up the finish. And you film it in a way that makes it look like it's happening live. And you just cut to that and that plays. But that is something that you do that has a bit of, you know, production value put into it. You can cut the shot away and you can set up making sure that the eye looks realistic in popping out of Ray's head. Like you do all of that so that it does feel legit. Whereas at the end of this, it really did just go like, oh, he's holding a prop eye, is he? Excellent. Like, I mean, the same, I feel like it could have been achieved with just a blood capsule. Like, a better effect would, like, because it was cool when he took the little eye patch off and you were like, wow, he's got that misty eye. That looks really great. And then he gets pushed into the steps and you're like, okay, that's the one that's coming out. But then, yeah, just like gushing blood from your eye socket, which you would imagine if your eye popped out, I imagine if something would happen. And even if I'm not a fancy doctor, but I just feel like I would believe that more than Seth doing that. He turns around to be like, cool, got to finish getting this eye out. And then walks off to be sick. And then you've got cut to that shot of Ray with a little golf ball in his hand, whatever it is. Like, that ending, even if the whole match wasn't, the ending should have been cinematic and it should have been pre-recorded and it should have been filmed until it was, and should have been filmed and edited and had all the post-production effects put on it until it looked real. Like just for a second looked real. Like you don't have to dwell on the shot for ages, but just doing it live just made it so much harder to do that effect, because the only way to show an eye popping out of someone's head is with a close-up shot. And all these sorts of effects that aren't going to be imperfect, actually distance is the thing that makes them look better. You know, a little bit of being a little bit further away just makes it a little bit easier to sell that story in. It's a shame because it was, I think it really did add to the match, the gimmick. And I don't mind how stupid and goofy it kind of is, really.
Yeah, it was, we said on the show, kind of wish it was just an Extreme Rules match. That was just a sort of a hardcore brawl that these, because these two were working together so, so well and creating this incredible story. And actually the drama around the eye, as you say, was really, really good. Lots of eye-based action. You know, Seth with the had the pliers out there, the bit with the kendo stick, you know, the snap the kendo snap stick in half. Yeah. There were lots of like really, really cool and inventive spots around a gimmick that sort of hampered them. And Louis Dangle
stuck it in the turnbuckle.
Yeah. Oh, amazing stuff. And Louis Dangle said this in our morning meeting this morning, which I completely agree with. It's the same as the Randy Orton Edge match from Backlash. Those two had an excellent match, but it was not the greatest wrestling match of all time. Mm-hmm. But because WWE said this is the greatest wrestling match of all time, it didn't live up to expectations. And the same thing happened here. These two had a great match, which was hampered by a very, very stupid gimmick that they could never actually pull off. Mm. And we talked about this on the live stream yesterday. Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D has a moment where Jason squeezes a guy's head and an eye pops out. I've got a picture of it here. Right, you know, this film came out in 1983, I think it was, probably a tenth, maybe even a fifth of the budget that WWE has for their weekly show. And I think Friday the 13th did it better in 1983.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I'm not in the band, like, I'm not on the bandwagon of wishing this was just a regular Extreme Rules match. I like the eye for an eye booking, I like the fact that that was like said up front that that was going to happen. But you just shouldn't do it if you can't achieve it. And I think they could have achieved it. They just chose the wrong path to take the match. I like Seth Giffing, though. I did really like
that. Yeah, yeah. Seth throwing up.
That little take when he makes the sort of bird of... He makes the noise of a little raptor. Like...
Yes. Seth threw up because of what he did. And actually, I'm really hoping... Because, like, Seth's selling of... him tearing an eye from a person's eye socket was actually really great. You know, he's the guy that did this and then threw up because of his actions. So I'm actually quite stoked to see his promo tonight because you'd thought based around that character work that he's going to be like almost ashamed of what he did and, you know, really sort of questioning himself about how far he has taken this Messiah gimmick. So I'm quite intrigued by that. The real downside to this and what makes this all sort of a little bit like a bittersweet and it wasn't even that sweet to begin with because, you know, it looked silly, is that we then had a segment later on with I believe Charlie Caruso stood outside the medical office where she said in so many words, Ray will be fine. He'll have his vision back. So actually none of it mattered at all.
They're just going to thumb that back in.
Absolutely none of it mattered. Ray's just going to be fine. And there was a smaller eye underneath his eye. It's the being thrown off the roof thing where you're like, you promised this big thing. You can't actually do it. And then the next day you go, and he's okay. Mm. It breathes a level of mistrust in the company.
Well, like Ollie said in the predictions, if you're going to have an eye popped out of your head, you should at least sell it for a few weeks, you know. just and they literally didn't even get to the end of the show without being like, Ray's going to be fine. And I get like, do you know what? That probably wasn't for us. That was probably for kids in that sense of like, Ray is one of the most popular WWE wrestlers with the younger audience and has been forever. So I just think you need to be like, yeah, okay, he's going to be okay, kids. Don't freak out. Don't, you know, we don't want to get letters of complaint. But it's kind of it's a shame because it detracts so much from the spectacle of like, you've gone to this amount of effort. You've had a man throw up on TV. Again, something that we've had someone spit in someone else's face. We had someone throwing up fluids onto the floor. You can put up as much plexiglass as you want, WWE, but no one's buying that you're taking this seriously. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's a shame because it's a great match. And I do really think it added to it, just the notion that someone was going to get their eye scooped out. But you just need to deliver on that. You know Tom Savini, for Christ's sake. Use him. Do it and just don't do it live. Like, really hard to do special effects live. Pre-record that bit. Man.
And the other bit of news from this as well is that Ray has been working without a WWE contract for quite some time now. And the story was that if he lost this match, it was kind of WWE's way of writing him off TV. So there's been no report yet whether he has re-signed with WWE or if this is going to be the end of Ray Mysterio in his WWE tenure. So that does remain to be seen.
Should just been the way to write him off then, shouldn't it? He's lost the eye. He can't see anymore. He can't wrestle because he's got one eye. That's a brilliant way to get rid of Rey Mysterio. Oh, so dumb. Stop hedging your bets on everything.
So for the Raw Women's Championship, it was Asuka versus Sasha Banks. A brilliant, brilliant match. Absolutely amazing. Amazing match. I loved watching these two work together. We said on the live stream last night, God, it's just good to see like Sasha in a pay-per-view singles match. Oh, it was just
absolutely
terrific to
killing it.
Yeah. Just working their asses off, doing great, great stuff. But we did have an incredibly convoluted finish, which kind of started with Banks at one point sort of buckling off the top turnbuckle. or the middle turnbuckle rather. Yeah. And it was, the match sort of stopped and ground to a halt for a little bit, but they carried on. So I think Banks may have just tweaked her leg somewhat, which made her fall. But, you know, she kind of screamed that she was going to continue. They did. I think she sold it very well that if this was a story like purpose, that actually, like, you know, the selling of it was incredible. I totally bought into it. And then we got a series of belts being thrown in. We had Kairi Sane and we had Bayley. We had Asuka tried to miss Sasha Banks, missed, and she missed the referee instead. We had Banks tapping out to the Asuka lock, and then Bayley just puts on the referee shirt and counts the three. They don't
after
ring the bell.
Asuka with the bell in the back.
Yeah. They don't ring the bell. They don't play her music. And then Bayley runs over to the timekeeper and yells at him to ring the bell, which he does. And then she gives Sasha Banks the Raw Women's Championship. They play Sasha Banks' music and they just leave.
Yeah.
And it just made everyone go, huh. So is she the champion now? But do you know what? You have to tune into Raw to find out.
Oh, man. It's like, it just undoes the work, doesn't it? I feel like, because it just... Yeah, I do think that description of it being an NXT quality match with a WWE quality finish is correct, because that finish just, it clunked so hard to get there as well. Like that, whether or not that was a legit, you know, tweak of the knee, or whether that was part of the storyline they were telling, like before that, everything that was happening was just pure poetry. It was so good that, you know, they were kept selling these German suplexes, like they kept threatening to do them off the apron. Sasha kept threatening the sunset flip powerbomb as well off the apron, and then finally hit it to Asuka onto the plexiglass. Like then Asuka starts hitting these crazy deadlift Germans. Like she tried to do one from the outside inside. That didn't work very well. But then she just picked Sasha up and was like, "Well, do another one then," and dumps her on the back of her head. Sasha's flopping around like folded up like a concertina, and then she does it again, and there's one off the top, and that's the one where she flips out and she lands on her knee. And I think that if that is a legitimate like knee tweak, that might be the moment where it happened. But it just, they worked together so well in this match, and they just did so many good spots. This was like so easily above a higher quality than anything else that happened on the show so far at this point. And I think everything else that happened on the show beyond finishes was really, really good, but this stood out to me as just like exceptional wrestling. It really was. And then, yeah, the finish was so overbaked that I was just like, I can't keep up with what they think is happening. Like,
it didn't help that it came off the back of the Apollo Crews MVP thing and then the eye thing. Like, I think just like it coming as sort of like the final part of that trilogy of sort of, you know, bad or non-finishes just made it seem worse. On any other night, I don't think this would have been an issue. But when you're doing it in the MVP Apollo Crews feud, and then you're also doing this eye for an eye shtick with the terrible rubbish fake eye, it is going to stick out, and I just don't think it's going to work. And I know some people have made reference to, oh, it's One Night Stand 2006. They're just doing that. Like, it's not the same thing. A, no one liked that finish either, and said it didn't make sense. B, Paul Heyman was the authority figure. He was the guy running the joints, so he can make those rules. Bayley's not running the show. She's not the authority figure. She has no authority, so it makes even less sense.
If it is literally as simple as putting on a referee's t-shirt, why isn't everyone doing it?
Yeah,
exactly. Like it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense that Asuka just sat there at the end and was like, "Oh, okay, that's done then." You know?
Yeah.
Why wasn't she chasing after them? It's like a hostage situation. The 24/7 title has had more people desperate to get it back more than this apparent loss of the Raw Women's Championship. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like a finish in which you go, okay, well, Bayley chucks a title into the ring to distract the referee. The referee's like, oh, get that title out of the ring. Meanwhile, another title is in the ring, and then Sasha Banks is holding it. Then the referee are having a tug of war. Meanwhile, Asuka's getting given a mist capsule by Kairi Sane, pops the mist in, mists the referee, gets the Asuka lock. There's an unseen tap out. So there's a visual win for Asuka. Bayley then gets in the ring and hits Asuka, pulls the referee shirt off, counts the pin. So many bits of it. It's just like, and another thing that's like, it's the if there's a clean finish in which someone just gets pinned, this is the dirtiest finish you could do. It's just like there's so much muckiness covering up this, what should be a really simple, like even just Sasha saying she's won and taking the belt. There's enough in that. Like,
but then that also raises questions of like, why wasn't there another ref? Like, why didn't another ref run down to be like, well, hang about, you're not an authority figure because Sasha's not the champion. Asuka is still the champion. So like the finish means absolutely diddly dick. So if the finish wasn't actually a finish, why wasn't there a referee to come down and be like, well, hang about, this match didn't get a finish. You're not a referee. This match should still be carrying on. It should be continuing.
Why is Charlie Caruso on hand to clear up Rey Mysterio's eye still working, but not to clear up this thing? That's what I want. Like, Charlie, barely investigative journalism there, Charlie. Like,
yeah. Right. But you know what I did enjoy? Really, really, really enjoyed was Drew McIntyre versus Dolph Ziggler for the WWE Championship. This is how good Drew McIntyre is. And this is actually how good Dolph Ziggler can be when he's given a bit of time to shine. Which, you know, I think after basically 20 years of being told you are nothing, you are just going to think, nah, he's a mid-carder for life. And Dolph is a mid-carder for life, you know, bless his heart. But this match was so, so great. What I've really enjoyed about this feud is the sort of storyline telling that they've been doing, which is that Dolph is not a worthy champion or a worthy challenger for this belt. Drew has handed him this opportunity. And so Dolph has gone in and then just stacked the deck against him. Because the stipulation that he made was, this is extreme rules for Dolph Ziggler. Also, you can't walk away from this match. If you get counted out, I win the title. If you get yourself DQ'd, I win the title. Mm-hmm. It was smart by Dolph, made him look really, really good, makes him look like a very smart, calculated heel, and then makes Drew look like the ultimate, you know, conquering babyface when he overcomes these odds that have been stacked up against him.
Yeah.
And you couple all that together with a wicked match anyway, with just the greatest selling by Drew. I really, really loved this match.
Well, this is when WWE is very good, when the idea is strong. Like, and obviously this is clearly an idea that came through pretty last minute in terms of like what they were imagining, but it's a very simple premise. It's like the smaller guy, the heel, stacks the deck against the bigger babyface champion who wants to do it honorably anyway. So that all just packaged together is just classic wrestling loveliness. And it's, you know, meanwhile, another show is going on in which, or like every match ends in a load of gubbins because they just didn't think through the actual gimmick or what was happening at the end. I just think the form of this match was so perfectly done. I think the stipulation didn't feel like it was maybe exciting enough to build into like a whole, there's a secret stipulation. And obviously they were just doing the secret because they didn't actually know. It was a secret to them too. So I think like the announcement and having Dolph get to sort of do that really smug, really long, here's what the rules are for the match, like that really played into it while Drew just has to sort of stand there and watch. And I think they really played with all the levels of extreme rules. Like it wasn't just I can use weapons and you can't. It was I can be as dirty as I want to be. So Dolph hits a low blow within the first like minute or so of the match. And then he's raking the eyes and he's like, there's all that really fun stuff with the count outs as well, where Dolph's not going to get counted out, but Drew has to beat the count out. I think they could have gone even further with that. And they could have had like Dolph trying to like stop Drew getting back in the ring and Drew trying to like barrel through Dolph to beat the 10 count. Like there's a lot of stuff in here that I think you could play this match type again and again. Mm-hmm. with different people at Extreme Rules, because I really think they've hit something here that works fantastically as just a different sort of handicap match. It really did feel like Drew wasn't on even footing with Dolph, or like at least Dolph had leveled the playing field here, and it really, really worked. It made it feel like there was a moment where Dolph could win. I obviously had to suspend my disbelief quite a lot, but you know, I did at least buy into the premise throughout the course of the match. Like it felt like a foregone conclusion because it's Dolph Ziggler and it's Drew McIntyre, but with somebody else, this really is a way to make it seem like somebody is going to steal a title win off a really big babyface. I think it's a brilliant bit of booking.
Hell of a finish as well, with Drew kipping up and then hitting the Claymore from out of nowhere. Absolutely amazing stuff. I feel like we're getting Dolph versus Orton at SummerSlam, and I'm really in for that match as well. And I'm really into that going either way. I didn't think I'd ever be into a position where I'm like, yeah, Randy Orton is WWE champion in 2020. I'm actually quite for that. Mm. But like, I'd love to see Drew win. I'd love to see Randy win. And I think that's a really good sign. So there was a comment in the chat that really caught my eye, where someone said, you're praising WWE's bad booking and they have lowered their standards because you never rant about their booking. And I'm like, where have you been for the last 40 minutes? It's pretty much all you've done on this show.
Just talking about the booking. One of the things I really loved about the finish to this match was like, this was that it works because it's the moment where it is the moment in the match where Ziggler gives up on the premise that he's his own booking of the match, his own stipulation. He gets so frustrated that Drew won't stay down that he's chucking the chairs out of the ring. Mm-hmm. He's throwing away the weapons and he's like, fine, well, I'm going to use my most powerful move, the Sweet Chin Music, and starts tuning up the band. And that's what, unfortunately, someone else also likes to tune up bands. And they just like, oh, we're tuning up the band. That's fire me up. Pops up Claymore kick. Brilliant finish, but yeah, because Dolph didn't press the advantage. So I think it's still at least there's that wrinkle in there that like you can still, Dolph doesn't lose all legitimacy here by being like, you had everything and you threw it all away. It's that momentary slip that gave Drew the moment to hit his finisher and win the match. I just think it's really, really clever. They put together something really incredible here.
Yeah, I really, really like this. As I said, like top to bottom, it was my favorite thing on the Extreme Rules card. I thought it was really great. And the main event was the cinematic match, the swamp match between Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. So, I mean, we won't go through this sort of beat for beat, but what I really liked about this, and there was quite a lot of positives from this, Braun being attacked by himself, I thought was visually very, very interesting, particularly because he was like, you know, in his old, like, you know, Wyatt family gear. The avatars they had for Harper and Rowan, I thought was quite a nice little touch. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. The lad getting set on fire, I thought was pretty wild. And that was, you know, quite fun for a cinematic match. Then Bray's like monologue that he has about how that he's been kind of trapped in the mind of the Fiend. Like his monologue was gripping stuff, and he's such a good actor, and I love this extended lore around the character. So I really enjoyed that, you know, the Viper in the family reference with the snake, and I really enjoyed the surprise cameo of Alexa Bliss as Sister Abigail. Now Alexa Bliss is not Sister Abigail. They're not repackaging Alexa Bliss as Sister Abigail, but it was Sister Abigail using the form of Alexa Bliss to lure Braun back into the family, I thought was really, really cool. It was a very nice surprise. My main criticism I had about this is that the finish was crap. Like it just ended.
Yeah, there was no. This is the thing. It's like, you know, the Boneyard match had a clear, defined finish. You were buried alive. The Firefly Funhouse match had a clear, defined finish. It was a match. And John Cena got pinned at the end of it to finish the match. This swamp fight didn't go anywhere. It didn't have a, you know, like, I don't know, like at some point, Braun turns up to have this fight and then Bray ends up having a conversation with him for a long time. And then there's a load, and then gets him bit by a Viper, then lets him go so he can beat up knock off Rowan and then set him on fire. Then they're brawling around the boat. Then the boat goes away. The boat comes back. Then they're in the water having a fight. And then it's about who gets the throw. Then it's about who gets thrown in the water after that to do the finish. Mm. And then Bray goes in the water and Braun's like, it's over. I've won. He's in the water. Then Bray pops out and drags him in and then comes out as the Fiend. It doesn't make sense. It needs that clear, defined, like, what is the purpose of this? Are they trying to kill each other? Is Bray trying to win Braun back into the family? What is the goal here of both men? What are their motivations? Because it seemed like for a bit of it, Bray's motivation is trying to get Braun back. And then it becomes, no, it's not. It's a fight to the death. And then we're trying to push each other into the water. And then when they go in the water, the Fiend pops out and he's like, he's been released. But is that because the Fiend's been released because Bray Wyatt, who was saying, I've been trapped in the mind of the Fiend for this long and I've only just wrested control back, is that because he's dead and he's been drowned? Or is that because it's a lake of reincarnation that Bray's already had a dip into? Like, you know, is that it? Like, what has happened? And could we have at least a little bit of that explanation before we go into the match so we actually know what the point is? Because it didn't, it felt so, it just didn't have a through line like in it. It felt like it was a series of vignettes that had been taped together. And you know, the Firefly Funhouse match was a series of vignettes that were taped together, but the narrative that ran through it was so carefully constructed to deconstruct who John Cena was, that you end up at this point where you're like, well, of course, now the Fiend arrives and pins John Cena because John Cena has been psychologically worn down to the point that that will happen. This was at points, it was a psychological assault on Braun Strowman, the character. And at other points, it was a physical assault on Braun Strowman, the character. But those two things are at odds when the psychological assault is, come back to us, Braun. We've got Alexa Bliss to dress up as Sister Abigail. You love that, don't you? You love that. Come back, Braun. And then in the next scene, Bray's like hitting him in the head and being like, come back. We can punch you again. Like, it doesn't make sense.
But I did dig it. Like I really did dig the story and everything within there. You know, I liked them, you know, essentially Bray wanting to use Braun to fight off the Fiend. It almost felt like, so I really dug a lot of that. I said my issue with it was just, the finish seemingly came out of nowhere. Like the show just ended. Like match just ended. Like it didn't, it felt like we were about to get into the climax and then it just stopped. And you and Denise were sitting on the live stream. The warning, the little copyright logo seemingly came up a bit early and then it just ended.
Well, they were trying so hard. They were trying so hard to do the one final scare thing. He's not actually dead. Like, you know, that's horror film, right? That's what they were going for. The one last jump scare.
And this whole thing was just reference upon reference to like Bray's favorite horror films as well.
And that's fine. But it did. It felt like a grab bag of like loose threads that just didn't, there wasn't cohesion in this story that they were trying to tell. And like, there was some, like, I think Bray's performance in the monologue and stuff was exceptional. He's so good. But they just didn't really know how to do it with Braun here. Like they didn't, like, I think like the John Cena one worked so well because clearly Cena was so willing to just be like, yes, destroy me. Like, you know, he's already reached that point in his career where he's untouchable anyway. So you can just unseeable and untouchable. They can just go to that. They could just go like, you know, he was dominated by the Undertaker the year before. So he's already, you know, willing to hand over all the kind of glory to somebody else and elevate them by just his mere presence of being like, well, you've beat John Cena this handily. Look how amazing that is. But they couldn't do that with Braun here. They can't, because Braun is still going to be the Universal Champion coming out of this. And they need to make him look strong to go into SummerSlam against the Fiend, if that's what they are doing, which it seems like they probably will be. But it just made it so confusing. And I feel like for all the extra layers of production, you can pile on this by filming it in a swamp and having all these lily pads and all, you know, all this other stuff and the boat driving away magically on its own. You've got a boat that drives itself. It's incredible the amount of money they've spent on this. The match they had in the ring was better and had a better story going through it. And the only prop they added to a regular wrestling match was a broken black sheep mask. And the simplicity of that outweighs the kind of the scope and I think the ambition of this match, because I don't think this match lived up to its ambition.
I'm quite excited for us to get Braun versus the Fiend. I think they've been building that, you know, for some time now, and I have quite enjoyed that. So I think that at SummerSlam, you know, 1 year after the Fiend debuted, I think it'll be good. You know, I mean, who knows? We haven't seen a Fiend match for some time, but I'm looking forward to it regardless.
Yeah, I think I really am looking forward to it.
Yeah, but that was the show overall. I thought it was a night of good wrestling with some bad finishes. It was frustrating at times. The Asuka Sasha Banks finish would not have bothered me had it not come after the eye for an eye and the MVP thing. the eye for an eye was cheap and rubbish, and if you can't do it, then don't do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but like overall, I didn't hate the show. I thought it was, you know, like a 2, maybe a 3 out of 5 show, because I really, really liked that Dolph Drew match. But yeah, you know, and I enjoyed a lot of elements of the Swamp match as well. So overall, you know, it was basically a thumbs up show.
Yeah, it's indicative of wider problems in WWE, isn't it? That you've got, they're confused about what the main thing is in WWE at this exact moment in time, and it's because the TV shows are worth lots of money, and the pay-per-views probably aren't worth as much money as they once were. But they build the pay-per-views like they're the most important thing, and then that most important thing just feeds back into, you actually need to just go back to watching Raw, really. You could skip this pay-per-view. And that's why the elegance of the Dolph and Drew match works really nicely, because it feels like that's a line drawn under that. That we saw the finish of that feud. It was a very short feud, but it felt like it, you know, and it didn't feel like it was worth really investing in, but they managed to make it feel like it was worth, if you did invest in that feud, your time was well spent, because what you got was a very succinct, nicely put together, carefully constructed match that had a very satisfying finish. And then you've got all this other stuff that's more highfalutin going on that sort of left you a bit cold at the end, but there was very good wrestling. So it's really hard to be like, I just don't know where I sit with this, because yeah, it, like you said, it feels like you might as well not watch the pay-per-view, because you just got to watch Raw and SmackDown anyway. And they're going to recap the pay-per-view on Raw and SmackDown. Of course they are. So yeah. But then you would have missed out on great wrestling. I don't know anymore. WWE, please just give me wrestling with good finishes. God damn it.
Yeah, like, you know, the Attitude Era was rife for this as well, particularly when Vince Russo was in charge, because Russo cared about the ratings. That's what he was in. He wanted them to beat WCW in the mm-hmm. ratings. And I think that's what Vince wanted as well, really, was to, you know, to win this ratings war. So their pay-per-views a lot of the time would end with these crazy finishes, and like, you know, the closing line would be, well, better tune into Raw tomorrow to find out. Mm-hmm. Problem was, they were both serving each other. The TV shows were making you excited for the pay-per-views, and the pay-per-views were delivering in spades and, you know, giving you some amazing stuff, and then would give you more teasers to then watch the next show. It was this one continuous storyline. Whereas what we've got at the moment is we've got TV that's building up to a pay-per-view, that's building up to a TV, but none of them are actually
paying off.
So yeah, it was a frustrating show, but one that I didn't hate.
Caught in an endless cycle of hype. And you can only sustain a level of hype so much. Like, this is why marketing strategies are so careful. But like, you know, and I think this is the problem. WWE is just trying to rev us the whole time about nothing. And I think you catch on to that eventually, that like nothing is happening. It's all going to it feel like we're watching a sitcom, it feels like, because we're just going to return to the status quo at some point. And especially when SummerSlam's around the corner, and that feels like where the big stuff's really going to happen. So yeah, like, I'm most satisfied by things that were just like either clean or like fresh, where it's like New Day and Cesaro and Nakamura feels like that's good progress. Something has happened. And then all these other things that were much bigger and more touted about the show left me a little bit like, ugh. But I did see some good wrestling, so I can't complain. And I enjoyed my beers that I had with it, so there you are.
Right, well, let's have the rest of your super chats about what you thought of the show. Azo Smith said, if Sasha's fall wasn't a botch, then kudos to her, because Jesus, that looked rough. Yeah, really did. Nacht Bogan says, while I'm enjoying Banks and Bayley, it does seem bad, basically giving Bayley a free title reign till the friend implosion makes the title matches obvious. Perhaps, yeah, but I think it also added intrigue into the other title match. So I think they do actually balance each other out quite nicely. And, you know, Denise has sort of been waiting for that friend implosion for quite some time. She thought it might have happened at a previous pay-per-view. So I think it's always there, like on the cusp and on the cards.
Yeah, I think it's my feelings about the Banks and Bayley thing is they should have just done it already. Like, I think they should have got it out of the way after they both came out of NXT and just been like, you know, the first time they started teaming together, just did the implosion ASAP. Because I do think it overshadows a lot of what else is going on with them, and because people are just expecting that to happen again. And yeah, it does just make every other match that Bayley has feel a bit throwaway, because we all feel like Sasha's going to be the one. And she probably isn't. Like, you know, WWE, they're probably not going to do that. Like, they might. They're just, they love a swerve for the sake of a swerve. So they're probably not going to have any Sasha beat Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship. But it does just feel like that's on the cards. So, yeah, because we're all trying to guess ahead. You know, we've built ourselves into a state of hype, unfortunately. And we're now paying the price for it because you struggle to get into the matches.
Billy Joyner says, the wrestling was great, but the finishes were mostly just odd. Suggestion for Quizlemania, it'd be cool to see Danhausen on the show. Jam that jam. Yeah, I mean, that's probably up to Ring of Honor, but yeah, Danhausen would be a lot of fun to have on there. Taxel, another ref should have come out to DQ Asuka so she retains, but then you could still have them steal the belt. Yes, but you could also make the argument that they should have been DQing Sasha and Bayley because they were also interfering in the match. Although I suppose Asuka did actively attack a referee. So yeah, a lot of stuff that could have been done. Azo Smith said, Sasha, as good of a seller as she is a pro wrestler. And that speaks absolute volumes about this because she is, no pun intended, boss. Yeah, she's so, so good. Absolutely brilliant.
I can't believe I've done more with her in all the time. Yeah. She's so good.
And El Fomentado says, I like Bray giving continuity to WWE storylines. Yeah, he is someone who really cares about his character and the sort of the wider scope of it, which you don't see a lot of. And I think it's actually credit to WWE for allowing him to have a lot of this creative freedom around that character. Not a lot of people get that. And it's kind of a shame that they don't.
I think it's because they don't understand it. So they're just like, you're going to have to explain it, mate, because we don't know.
Dartrain24, what's Quizlemania this week? Ollie is so bad that I'm genuinely starting to believe it to work. Luke, take 1 week off after winning, and then you can come back to beat the fake champion. I mean, I actually am off this week, but then again, so is Quizlemania. And I can tell you this, it's not a work. Ollie gets flustered very easily. He is very knowledgeable about wrestling and wrestling history. He just panics under the pressure. Like, you know, he'd be rubbish on Mastermind, basically. Fritz said, message to Blompier relating to his wrestlers thanking each other video. When Asuka and Banks were both down, Banks rubbed Asuka's arm, then Asuka scratches Banks's head. Better you do what's list 12. Love that, work, stay awesome. Sorry, I didn't quite make it out towards the end. But yes,
probably update the list to 12 because I think it was 11 examples.
Okay. I think he had the scratching one, though. I think he had that in there.
Oh, well, this is last night when they came off the top turnbuckle during the
season. Yeah.
Yeah, they gave each other a little.
It was very nice.
You're
very
okay. Lovely moment.
Yeah.
Paul, the powerhouse beef Maslin, says, is it just me? Watching the split screen is like a before and after. Left is Luke before a four-hour pay-per-view and right is Luke after a four-hour pay-per-view. I can't grow that beard. That's the problem. Sandy Pan, thank you very much for your big donation. Hey guys, thank you for everything you do. Any idea why WWE is so inconsistent other than the disconnect from the audience? I think they think they are consistent. I think, you know, they are. They think that they're making a good show. And, you know, absolute credit to you. If you think you're making it, we think we make a good show and people tell us otherwise. So, you know, who are we to say that WWE is wrong if they think they're making a great show?
Yeah, I mean, if people are watching, that's the only answer, isn't it? Are people watching? That's the goal of a TV show. The argument being that WWE have had very low ratings recently, so probably not, would be my argument.
Small Afro Games, Jaron Walker, it's my birthday. Happy birthday there, mate. I would love you too, dude. And lastly, Tudor says, am I the first Romanian that has sent you guys a super chat and that gives you money rather than take it? I think you might be. You might not be, but no one has ever referred to themselves or said they are Romanian. So thank you very, very much. And thank you all for watching this WrestleTalk podcast review of the horror show at Extreme Rules. If you're watching this on catch up, please do click the videos that have appeared on screen right now to catch up with more awesome WrestleTalk things. And we will be back for another podcast tomorrow. Pete and Ollie will be doing the Raw review and AEW because I'm off for the week. So, and it'll be Adam and Alex, I think, doing the Friday show, and you'll be doing the NXT review. Mm-hmm. The podcast will be fine, folks. Those people who said that...
it's not going anywhere.
Well, there was a comment yesterday on the live stream that was like, God, I can't wait for Luke to be off these podcasts. He is the Omni-Luke. And I'm like, well, that guy's getting his wish because I'm taking a week off. See you later, guys. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.